And welcome in to the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. Joe Rex Road live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in advance of Tennessee and Clemson in the Orange Bowl coming up on Friday. Joe, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. But I want to hear about Michelle's vacation to Chicago and also to go see a terrible Bears team in negative 100 temps.
Michelle, welcome back. Tell us about your vacation.
Guys, first off, never made it to New York. So we did the holidays in Chicago. That game, listen, I know it was freezing. Oh, it was one of the coolest experiences ever. We had like sixth row tickets somebody gave us. Like, it was just a really cool experience all around. You know, I know, obviously, you know, the Bills are one of the best teams in the league. Bears are one of the worst, but it really was a fun experience. And I didn't get like frostbite. I was very well prepared. I had about five layers on top, three on bottom, you know, four pairs of socks, toe warmers, all that. And then it took us I was telling Robbie Joe about 11 and a half hours to get home on Monday. So
that was a great time.
I think it's like four canceled flights, 11 and a half or almost 20 hours in the car total. But listen, we're here. We're back. The New Year's coming up. I'm just happy I didn't have to actually go to an airport and my flights were canceled before that, because from all the videos, listen, if you were affected by that, I'm sorry, because I would not be okay.
It looks like a fun time out there in the airport.
Wild.
What the heck is going on with Southwest Airlines?
I have no idea.
They don't have computers to keep track of their employees or something? I have my Rolodex here.
Guys, they have like 12,000 bags just
out there. That sucks.
Oh, that's so bad.
That is not good. Joe, I got a stat line to throw out to you. You ready for this one?
Okay.
60 points, 21 rebounds, 10 assists. That's Luka Doncic last night. 60 points, 21 rebounds, 10 assists. Maybe the most impressive triple-double I've ever seen in my life.
That's insane. And that includes free throw miss to slam it off the rim and somehow get the ball back and throw it in one motion to send it to overtime. Unbelievable.
Just amazing last night from Luka Doncic. We got a lot to get to today here on the program. We'll have Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel coming up at 6:30. Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com at 8 o'clock. And Predators forward Philip Forsberg joining the show at 9 o'clock. So looking forward to all that. And we begin with the Nashville Predators. They take on the Dallas Stars last night. And Joe, a good game at Bridgestone Arena. And it looked like it was once again heading to overtime for the Predators. And then with about a little bit under a minute remaining, Dallas takes the lead, and that was all she wrote last night. The Stars win 3-2, and the Predators drop one in regulation last night at home, falling to 14-14-5 on the regular season. That one hurts. I mean, look, Dallas, I thought, was the better team for most of the game last night, certainly the first 15 minutes. I mean, they just totally blitzed the Predators, and it could have been 3-4-5-0 in the first 15 minutes. Predators hung in there. They made it a game. It was 2-2. And when it's 2-2 with less than 2 minutes left, you're hoping you can at least get a point out of it, and nothing last night for the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, it's brutal to give up that goal, late like that. Because I thought they battled, you're right. I mean, the Stars are better. That was a superior team beating an inferior team. But the Preds fought. You had the mistake early. I think by Novak to give him one, you get the Trenin goal, you get Forsberg on the board. It's at least, it wouldn't have been that satisfying to lose that one in overtime. Like you did against Colorado, but like a point, every point right now is very valuable. And so you get nothing out of it. And yeah, you just, at some point, you've got to start winning these games, or it's just the gap just widens on you.
Well, and the gap continuing to widen last night. I mean, you look at what happened last night. Edmonton wins against Calgary. Minnesota takes down Winnipeg last night. So right now, The Predators are now 7 points out of the closest playoff spot. And in terms of the top three in the division, you're now 9 points back of Minnesota. So 9 points back of Minnesota, 10 points back of Winnipeg, and Colorado and Edmonton still hanging around there at 40 points. So, I mean, you're starting to get a little bit of distance. Now, I said it, and I have to go back and check today. I don't know if they've updated the odds today, this morning yet. But before the games were played yesterday, heading into the Christmas break, you know how they do those money puck playoff odds? Predators were around 15%. And obviously losing last night and with some of the other results, that's probably gone down. You know, I don't want to get too much into that because a couple of years ago, I mean, we got to a point where the Predators' playoffs odds were, I think, were about 2%, and they found their way back in there and made the playoffs. So it doesn't mean that you're totally out of it, but it does illustrate that mathematically you're losing some wiggle room and losing some ground pretty quickly here if you're the Predators.
Yeah, you're getting to the point where you're going to have a crazy hot streak. And look, it could happen, you know. I mean, it could happen. There are some things that are – there are some things that have gotten better for sure. I mean, I think they're playing better hockey consistently. But even Hines said it last night, and I feel like – and I know it's kind of a player-speak, coach-speak thing, but, like, you know, game – consistent game, you know, having a more consistent game. You know, they continue to talk about that. I mean, I feel like elements have gotten better for sure. It's not – you know, it's not like a disaster – They still, you know, ultimately they come away with two goals. Like, you have to score more, right? But you feel like there's some, you know, now you have Forsberg and Duchesne, of course. Congrats to him, by the way.
Yeah.
Duchesne. Not congrats to, was it you who picked
him? Yeah,
it was me. Yeah, you should have been more attuned to his reproductive calendar. Yeah, but
so.
Congrats to the Duchesne family, you know, for their third kid, right? Third baby?
Yep.
Third child. So he missed the game last night, but you know, he has been on a little bit of a heater. And he had four, you know, I mean, you can see where some things are getting better, but, like, you know, you also have lost a lot of wiggle room.
Well, you have, and, you know, you bring up the offense. It looked like maybe you were starting to figure some things out. You scored four against Edmonton, you scored four against Chicago, and now the last couple of games, two against Colorado, and that game went to overtime, and two last night against Dallas. I mean, when you're scoring two goals a game, you're not going to win. I mean, you're not going to beat these good teams when you're scoring two goals a game. And I do think that they've looked better offensively. Like, they had some good looks last night. Colorado game, they had a lot of shots, had a lot of good looks. So it's not like they're just out there getting totally stonewalled. But you got to find a way to finish on some of these chances. Look, it was good to see Yakov Trenin find the back of the net last night. It's a heck of a shot that he had. Shout out to Terry from Murfreesboro with the number one overall selection of Yakov Trenin yesterday in Preds Pick to Click. Nailed it yesterday. So a nice pick from Terry from Murfreesboro there. But one of those things where you have to find a way. It feels like there have been very few times this year, Joe, where they've had multiple guys put it together offensively on a consistent basis in one night. Like, how many times this year has Forsberg, Duchesne, Johansson, Josi, you can go up and down the list. Jeannot, Trenin. How many games this year have all those guys been rolling at the same time? I mean, I don't know that there's been any.
Right. And, you know, like with Jeannot, as we've talked about, there just hasn't been much time at all, you know, for him. So, yeah, and that's what it's going to take. I mean, it's going to take, you know, the best version of what we thought this team could be for, like, a consistent and extended stretch at some point, you know, to flip this thing around.
Yeah, no question about it. And now you're looking at a part of the schedule, and we talked about these last 3 weeks here, how important they've been from the teams that you've played in the Western Conference. Well, now they're heading out on the road today. They're kind of getting in there early, taking on Anaheim Friday, and then flying to Vegas for that game on Saturday. But over the next 8 games, you got one home game. You're doing a lot of road games coming up. You got Anaheim and Vegas on the road. You're back at home next Tuesday for the Montreal game. And then there's a 5-game road trip in the Eastern Conference with Carolina, Washington, Ottawa, Toronto, Montreal. Some tough games in that stretch. So this next little stretch here, you're going to have to find some ways to win on the road. Now, you're playing Anaheim coming up on Friday. You need to win that game. They are awful this year. So you got to start winning games against some good teams, but you certainly need to continue to take care of business against the bad teams. But a lot of games coming up for the Predators on the road. And, you know, look, you're at the point of the season now where the calendar is about to flip to 2023. And I know that there are, what, 49 games left now for the Predators? There's still a lot of hockey that's left. But, man, you're quickly running out of time here in what's going to be, I think, a really competitive Western Conference. And we talked about it last week, Joe. It was good to get the win against Edmonton. It was good against the win against Chicago. You needed to get one of those next two, and the Predators couldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, had they gotten a point last night, you still wouldn't feel great about that. But 2 points out of two games against really good teams, that's – you can live with that. You can certainly live with that more than, you know, giving up that goal with 52 seconds left. And it's just, you know, to have a point ripped from you is just a tough way to go. So, yeah, you got to, you know, the Ducks showing up on the schedule, whenever that happens, you know, that's a gift. So, got to accept that one.
Yep, we're off and running here today on Robbie and Rex Road, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on the Preds coming up next. There's one stat that I cobbled together last night that, to me, is pretty concerning about where this team is right now. We'll get to that coming up next. Bob, hang with us. We'll get to you as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
Face off to the left of Saros. Granlund faces off, wins the draw, and the puck behind the Predator net. Ekholm passes down the right wing side, taken inside the circle, a rebound, and a score! Philip Forsberg follows up the rebound and ties the game in the 4-on-4.
Philip Forsberg on the board last night. Yakov Trenin scoring as well, but not enough for the Nashville Predators. They fall 3-2 last night at the hands of the Dallas Stars. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning. Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Bob from Antioch. Bob, thanks for calling in.
Good morning, guys. Happy New Year. Yossi was quoted after the game as saying that they came out flat in the first period, and there seem to be a lot of games where that's happened. Do you think that Hines should consider reuniting the herd line at least for a portion of the game to generate some more energy? And my second question is, why do you think they have a tendency to come out flat? Because they come out flat frequently.
Hey, thanks for the call, Bob. Well, on the first part of that, Joe, the herd line part of it, it's a good question, and I've thought about it. My answer is, let's think back to last year when the Predators were at their best. The herd line was a big part of it. They were the energy line. They were on the forecheck. But not only that, they were also contributing offensively. And really from about late February, early March last year, basically until now, none of those guys have really done all that well offensively. And they've put them together to begin the year, and it just didn't look the same. Didn't feel the same out there. The forecheck wasn't quite as strong as it was a year ago. They weren't having the same impact on the game. So it's an interesting question. Like, to start the season, I thought it was a no-brainer to put those guys together just because of how important they were a year ago. But we're going on a pretty lengthy sample size now of those three being together where they weren't playing the same, and they've not been together now in some time, to Bob's point. So I guess I would lean no. I just don't think the results were there since they've been together. But I will say this, Joe, the more Tanner Janot continues to struggle offensively and to not get on the board, maybe it would serve him well, Trenin well, to just go back to what they know best, and that's playing with those three together.
Yeah, I agree. I think they should try it. I mean, you know, why? You know, why? Like, again, last year, the explanation which made sense was, I mean, Janot has never been through a year like this, and there was some sort of wall he probably hit. And, I mean, you know, you talk about all he produced, the physicality he played with all year. He didn't look like the same guy. He specifically didn't look like the same guy in the last few weeks of the season. Okay, makes sense. So come back and bring it back, run it back. And I agree with you, it didn't look right, but why? Why wouldn't it? Why over a period of time wouldn't those guys be able to rediscover some level of what they did last year? I mean, obviously, like the Preds win two in a row, and there's been so much tinkering with the lines by John Hines that they win two in a row. You're going to stick with that. At some point, I think they should come back around to that because Janot in particular is just does not look like the same player.
No, he doesn't. And as far as Bob's second part of the call, like the coming out flat, I was interested to see what would happen yesterday, and we talked about it briefly yesterday on the show. That first game after the Christmas break is always pretty interesting to see who's sharp and who's not. And the first 15 minutes of the game yesterday, the Predators were awful. I mean, they couldn't break out of their own zone. They were turning the puck over left and right. And really, you know, Saros was good. And that's the only reason it wasn't 2-3-4-0 after the first period yesterday. So why that was the case, why Dallas looked so much sharper than they did coming off the Christmas break, I couldn't tell you. I did think the Predators settled in pretty well after that, and they started to find their legs, and they looked better as the game went on. But to Bob's point, it's not the first time that's happened. I mean, there have been times this year where they've come out in the first period, and they've just been blitzed, and they've given up the first goal on the first, second, or third shot a lot so far this year too. And, you know, that's not always been on UC Saros. I think it was more on Saros earlier in the year. I mean, last night you turn the puck over and Jamie Benn is just wheeling down by himself in the middle of the slot. I mean, you would like for Saros to make a save there, but that's a good player and a good shot on that play. So I couldn't tell you why that's been the case on a semi-consistent basis this year that they come out and they've just gotten torched in the first part of the first period. Some of it's the fact that they've played some good teams. And, Joe, that kind of leads me to my point that I wanted to bring up. I did some math last night, which is always a very scary thing when I start doing that, especially when it was late after the game and I was tired.
Late,
so, you know, I think this is right. I double-checked it and came up with the same number, so we're going to go with it. I counted as of today, as of the standings right now, the playoff teams that the Predators have played against. So the teams currently in the playoffs on the Western Conference side of things and the Eastern Conference side of things, Preds have a 5-10-4 record against those teams. 5-10-4. That is not good. That is very concerning about the quality of this team as they move forward.
Yeah, it sounds about right, you know. And it speaks to basically a team exactly where they are in the standings. Like this, like basically it speaks to they are exactly where they should be in the standings. And that's a bad place to be because again, I mean if you're going to be well clear of the playoffs, be really bad, you know. Wait, what is it? What's the hashtag? Not blow it for Bedard.
It's bleep the bed for Bedard.
Bleep the bed for Bedard.
Come on, Joe.
You invented it. What do you? How'd you forget it?
The holidays. I don't. I've had way too many sugar products in the last few days. You know the stupid fudge. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Same. I had a cookie for breakfast.
But, yeah. There you go, a cookie for breakfast. Nice. No, but that you know, the funny thing about a cookie for breakfast is the same thing as a muffin. You know, like it's a really, there's really no difference.
Thank you.
But yeah, I mean, you're talking about a team that's exactly in the postseason or in the standings where they should be.
Yeah, it's not a great spot, and that's not a very encouraging record against teams that are pretty good so far this year. Let's go to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Heidi from Dixon texting in says, with no young stars coming up and a bunch of older superstars that disappear often, what are we even trying to do at this point? This from Heidi and Dixon on the text line. Got another texter that says, why aren't you talking about this being a lost/wasted season the same way you do about the Titans? This from an unnamed texter on the text line.
We got a Titans. I love when like I love the Titans or Preds fan who hates the other team. I love that one.
Oh yeah.
You know, you hate my team and you love the other team. Okay. I mean, these seasons are at different stages. And actually, I think yesterday we still were talking about the Titans. getting to the playoffs, were we not?
We were. Starting a different quarterback to try to get in the playoffs and win the division.
So who cares what we actually say? Just scream about stuff that you imagine we say.
It's beautiful. Bryant from Memphis on the text line says, this Preds team reminds me of the way Dallas was for the past several years. The difference is they drafted and developed some young stars. I believe this won't happen for the Preds with David Poile as general manager. We should have traded Forsberg. We shouldn't have signed Nino. And we shouldn't have traded for McDonough. And we need to trade Saros. This team will never get it done. This is from Bryant from Memphis on the text line. It's a lot of moves.
That is a lot of moves. Dallas is interesting because they've just sort of like you never know each year what you're going to get, you know. But the point remains. I mean, even when you go back to that playoff series, you know, some of those young guys started to emerge in that series. You know, I mean, they certainly have done a better job and have had more quality come up through the ranks for them than the Preds have had.
Well, Dallas, honestly, kind of reminds me of the Predators from last year a little bit from this standpoint. Sagan and Ben don't look like absolute anchors out there anymore. I mean, right. I was wondering if Sagan and Ben were ever going to be productive again. And look, Sagan is still not being as productive as he's being paid to be. He's got 24 points in 36 games, but he's playing pretty well. And Jamie Benn, who I thought was really going downhill as a player, has 34 points in 36 games and scored his 14th of the year last night. So those two guys that they signed to huge deals are playing really well. But to Bryant's point there, they've also drafted and developed and found some young players that have come in and are kind of that next wave, whether you want to talk about Roope Hintz, who scored the go-ahead goal last night, or Jason Robinson that has been just absolutely outstanding so far this year. They've had some young guys that are really good. I mean, Jason Robertson has 51 points in 36 games. I mean, the dude's a stud. So they have found some younger talent that have come in and that have kind of been that next wave, and the Predators have not been able to do that.
Yep. Yeah, Henson, there's a guy who in that series, you know, is like, whoa, this guy, you know, going back 4 years now. No, it's just they don't measure up right now. And look, they are, let's see, they're 15 points from the top. They're 13 points from the bottom. They're closer to the bottom. The absolute dregs. So bleep the bed for Bedard picks up steam, so to speak.
It does. We'll get back into the Preds coming up a little bit later. Predators forward Philip Forsberg joining the show at 9 o'clock. Coming up next, we'll get into the Vols. Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel will join us. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Looking ahead to the Vols and the Clemson Tigers coming up in the Orange Bowl. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Adam, good morning. How are we doing?
Real good, guys. How y'all doing?
We're good. I don't know what you've done to have to spend your holidays with Joe Rexroad, but we feel for you here on this program.
Yeah, well, his wife does and my wife does, so we can take solace in just working if we get tired of either of them, I suppose.
That is true.
That's I haven't even really begun to annoy him yet this week.
Well, I'm sure it's coming. It's coming down the pike, no question about it. Adam, as you look at this matchup, what do you think this game means for this Tennessee program? Obviously, I mean, you're not in the college football playoff, and we know as each year goes by, the college football landscape changes, and people, all they care about is the college football playoff around the country. But this is a game against a team and a program that's been one of the upper echelon programs in college football for the past decade. What do you think this game means for Tennessee coming up on Friday?
Well, I mean, I think for the fan base, especially, it's going to be an overreaction either way to either outcome. If Tennessee plays reasonably well, wins the game, Joe Milton plays well, then, you know, the overreaction is going to be Joe Milton is absolutely the starter all of next season. This team's going to win 10 games again. and all the pieces are in place. You know, Squirrel White's just going to be Jalin Hyatt, and he's going to win the Biletnikoff next year. That's going to be the overreaction if they play well. If they play poorly, then Joe Milton needs to jump in the portal. You need to go get Sam Hartman as your quarterback. There's no leadership on this team. Jeremy Banks is the scapegoat of anything that went wrong in the 2022 season, and that'll be if Tennessee loses. And neither of those would be absolutely true, but I think that's what we're going to get out of it. If you know, I mean, I think with a lot of these games, if you win it, it's a celebration. It's one of the, you know, it would be the best bowl win Tennessee's had in a couple of decades. If they lose it, I think they're going to sort of just wash it out and move on. And I think either one of those would be fair, but it will put a little bit of a bow on the season if they can win it. I think if they lose it, fans will forget quickly about it.
Yeah, but probably, like you said, Adam, carry forward the quarterback thing. See, it's interesting. I agree with everything you're saying, although I'm a little hesitant on the Milton. Like, if they win, Milton plays well, everyone's going to be embracing Milton. I still feel like the first deep overthrow next year, like, the internet is going to explode. Like, new message boards will be created for Nico must come in right now, you know? And I could be wrong, but I just, that five-star freshman and also the frustration, you know, at times with Joe Milton, I feel like that's a combination where, not that it really matters inside the building, but just from a fan base perspective, I feel like he's going to have a really thin margin for error next year. You agree?
I think from what I can tell, I think the two camps have already sort of fortified. I mean, it's World War I trench warfare. You got your line and you're sticking to it. You got your Nico side and your Joe Milton side. I wrote a story the other day about Joe Milton, his possibility of starting the 2023 opener, and I got a lot of feedback, and it was, you know, feedback from one side was, well, I guess you just think Joe Milton doesn't even have a chance. Why don't we just give it to Nico? And the other side was, so you're saying Nico has no chance at all. You're just giving the job to Joe Milton. And so, you know, it's in the eye of the beholder. If Nico's your guy right now, you're gonna stick with him all of next year and push and try to push him into the lineup. If Joe Milton is your guy, you're going to defend him. When he overthrows passes, you're going to say, well, you know, Hendon Hooker overthrew some too. And I think that's what Milton is going to deal with. I think within this game, you've got, I don't know, I mean, leadership is a word I think we overemphasize usually. I think maybe personality is more of the word in this game and then into next season. Because if you think about this team, Hendon Hooker was the maturity, the calm maturity of this team. He's not playing. Cedric Tillman was the alpha of the wide receiver core. He's not playing. Jalin Hyatt was the swagger. He's not playing. Jeremy Banks was the emotional leader on that defense. He's the guy that got them revved up before games. He's not playing. And so what's your personality of this team in this game? What's your personality going into next year? Josh Heupel's a big believer that you've got to have some personality for the team to succeed. And I don't know what this one is. You know, I went to practice yesterday, and usually you see Hendon Hooker, you know, walking around and clapping as if he's like a 40-year-old coach and talking to each player pretty calmly. Go out there yesterday and Joe Milton is dancing to a Katy Perry song, you know, in the middle of the quarterback drill. And by the way, that's what he should do because that's his personality. He can't become Hendon Hooker. But if that's the personality of the team, I don't know that you can just flip that switch in a bowl game. And the bigger question is if you can sort of go with, you know, with the type of demeanor that he has into next season.
Adam Sparks with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Adam, how intrigued are you to see what this wide receiving core looks like on Friday without Tillman, without Hyatt, and with guys that will play huge roles for Tennessee next year as 2023 begins?
Yeah, I mean, I want to see if Squirrel White can do what we've seen him do in snippets. I mean, I think the thing with him, though, people have to remember is that, you know, Jalin Hyatt had to put on weight and strength to finally thrive this year in that slot receiver spot. Squirrel White has not had a full off season to do that yet. So whatever you see, it's great. He's gonna do more of what he does in the off season is gonna determine what he is next year. Brew McCoy should be the guy next year unless they go get somebody in the portal at wide receiver, which obviously they're trying to do. you know, Brew McCoy's going to get a lot more attention in this game than he's gotten in a lot of other games. But he's performed in games well when he's filled in for Cedric Tillman and taken that spot. I mean, he's a more of a physical receiver. He's not going to break a lot of long plays. He's going to catch and run over people, which, you know, we're talking about personality. That can be your personality in that receiving core. You know, Ramel Keaton, I think he's going to come back. I still think they would like to get another guy to fill in that spot in the portal. So there's a little bit of a preview to next season in this game on both sides of the ball for Tennessee. But I think it's more of sort of an elimination type approach. It's what you see in this game is not going to be what the team is next year, but you could see some guys sort of downgraded out of competitions if they don't play well in this game, or if things just don't look like they work in this game. Tennessee, if they win this game, they're going to do it by running the ball. They're NFL caliber offensive tackle Darnell Wright is going into the portal. I'm sorry, he's going into the draft, but he is going to play in this game. He ran really well against Vanderbilt. If Tennessee wants to run the ball in this game, defend the run, take the pressure off of Joe Milton, and win it in that way. And by the way, Clemson wants to do the same thing with their freshman quarterback.
Yeah, and of course, Tennessee's defense, you know, there's a lot of we talked to them yesterday, Adam, the defensive side. We get the offensive side today, but the defensive guys, of course, talking about how, you know, there's not much film on Klubnik, but very impressed with him, said all the right things about him. But I'm very intrigued by that what you're talking about there and translating it to the defensive side of the ball, the sort of, you know, preview of next year, maybe elimination type game. Who on that side of the ball are you looking at as, you know, having important opportunities in this game?
Well, I mean, I more of that elimination approach I'm talking about. I want to see how the secondary plays because, Joe, I think I overheard you asking Tim Banks, the defensive coordinator, yesterday about who he liked in practice. And a lot of what I've heard from coaches and elsewhere is that in practice they love the freshman defensive backs. We can somewhat joke about it, but if they could play some of those, I'm talking about those early enrollees that just signed like a week ago. If those guys could play in this game, a couple of them probably would based on what they've seen in practice. And so those guys are, you know, nipping at the heels of this secondary that had a lot of issues this year. And I think you want to see how those guys perform, because if they perform well, it leads well into 2023 for them, or at least gives them more optimism. If they don't, then they've got a new crop of recruits to come in and take those spots and certainly compete in the spring. And, you know, Cade Klubnik, the freshman quarterback for Clemson, they're going to want to try to give him some high percentage passes, get him involved in the game really early. We're not going to know this because we're going to be in the press box, but I'm curious to see how the TV broadcast handles this game, because, you know, I saw yesterday Klubnik is already listed as like the, you know, way too early top 10 Heisman candidates for next year, which makes sense. He's a five-star quarterback. If he plays well next year and Clemson goes 11-1, he probably will be in that conversation. But the TV broadcast is going to get used to hearing Trevor Lawrence, because they're probably going to say that a dozen times, that Cade Klubnik is the next Trevor Lawrence. And a lot of the Tennessee fans are probably going to be annoyed a little bit by, you know, that talking point on the broadcast. Because Joe Milton is going to be like the number two quarterback in the storylines here. I think before this, he was going to be number one. And that's probably not going to be the case unless Tennessee wins in a blowout. But, you know, Clemson has a storyline of what they think they can do to lead into next year. Tennessee might have that, but we just don't know because they do have a number of key guys out.
Adam, last thing for you here. What do you make of the running back group that Tennessee's got, not only in this game, but as they move forward here? And how do you think Josh Heupel and this offensive staff handled Jabari Small, Jalen Wright, and Dylan Sampson, especially with him emerging over the last few weeks as they move forward?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty curious about that because, yeah, they do have three guys that have produced, and all three are coming back. But if you're giving a sort of a letter grade, you may say they have, like, you know, a couple of Bs and a B minus. That's good, but I think they're looking for an A. They've looked into the portal. They'll continue to look into the portal, and you don't know how guys are going to react to that. Justin William Thomas, their stud signee from last year has already gone into the portal and landed at Stanford. And because Dylan Sampson, the other signee in the same class, beat him out, and he's the number three guy. Well, if you, you know, are all three of those guys going to be happy if they try to go get a fourth guy because somebody's going to be downgraded? I don't know. They can go into next year and feel pretty confident about those running backs because they produced this year. But I do think they're looking for another element, in more dynamic element in that running back group, and we'll see how those guys react if they do sign one of the, or if they do go get one of those transfers.
Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Adam, great stuff as always. Enjoy the Florida weather down there with Rex Road, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys, we'll see you.
Absolutely. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on Tennessee and Clemson, including one player that has really caught Rex Road's eye as he looks ahead to what this team could be in 2023. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road is live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in advance of the Orange Bowl coming up on Friday. Thanks to Adam Sparks for joining us in the last segment. And Joe, there's one player that's caught your eye that you think could be a huge factor for Tennessee in 2023 on the defensive side of the football. Who are we discussing here?
Well, he announced he's coming back, Amari Thomas, correct, yesterday, which is a big deal. Yeah, I wasn't sure. I don't know where Amari Thomas would have gone. I do think he's a pro. I think this year he emerged as a really important player for them. And a leader. I think he'll be a leader next year too. But I think, you know, another year for him of improvement with Rodney Garner as as D line coach, he could be one of the top, I think, interior defensive linemen in the SEC. I think that's possible. So you got that. Now Tyler Barron said yesterday, that he's still not certain. That's an interesting one. With Tyler Barron, of course, Byron Young is going, yep, and I think that's the right decision. But he's also playing in this game, so he was there talking yesterday too. And I think a big thing with Tennessee is, with Barron, I mean, obviously they would love to have him back, and that would be a big deal. But I will say that he also, if he does come back, I mean, he's got competition for sure from some of these young guys. I mean, certainly, I think inside the program, Joshua Josephs in particular is a guy they think can be, like a star, like on a trajectory to be a high pick and a dominant, college football player. So that's an interesting thing. I mean, Young is leaving. There's certainly, if Barron comes back, he's going to be a key player next year. But there are young guys that they, Pierce is another guy. Of course, Tyree West. I mean, they've got guys who are, the recruiting looks pretty good so far with the young guys. And like Spark said, those young defensive backs are impressive. And I still think there's a difference between those early bowl practices when everybody's like, oh, right, they can run, they look the part. You still got to get out there on an SEC Saturday and get it done. Some of these guys who haven't played well for them this year, were at one point freshmen who everybody was excited about, right? I mean, you gotta keep that in mind, But there's some promising young defensive talent, and obviously they have to get better. And that's one thing when I asked Banks, I was trying to pick his brain yesterday on different guys who emerged. And, of course, he did the whole, well, if I mention one guy, then they're all going to get mad. Like, okay, all right. But he did acknowledge, it's not just the secondary. Like, they have to get better across the board in terms of their defensive talent. So, next year – that to me is, if they're going to try to maintain this and have another double-digit win season, they're going to have to be better defensively.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about that. The running back trio that we talked about with Sparks is really interesting to me because you've got Jabari Small, Jalen Wright, and Dylan Sampson, who really came on, the second half of the season, all coming back next year. And like Sparks said, I think you could feel pretty good about those three being your guys if that's the route you decided to go next year. It was interesting that Sparks said that maybe they'd be looking for another option at running back in the transfer portal as well. What do you make of kind of the running back group that Tennessee has, and what do you think of the idea of maybe adding to it?
Yeah, it is interesting. That would surprise me a little bit. But hey, I mean, if there's someone you feel like comes in immediately, you're always looking to improve your depth. So a portal ad at running back doesn't necessarily mean here's the new starting running back. But I will say, to me, that the way you get, like he said, I think that he put it well, it's a bunch of B's. I think the way you get to an A is, I think Dylan Sampson has a huge offseason, because I think Dylan Sampson could potentially kind of pass Jabari Small. And Jabari Small is really good, don't get me wrong. But Dylan Sampson, I think, has that extra level of explosiveness, big playability. And he's just one of those guys who you project him with a year in the weight room, and you could have something pretty special there. Jalen Wright, I mean, I think it's almost like one of those two guys, and as a compliment to Jalen Wright, but Jalen Wright has to stop fumbling.
I got a texture that says, no excuses in the Orange Bowl. Our guys versus their guys, and the winner is the superior team. Simple as that. Unless, of course, we lose, then it's a meaningless exhibition and preview of next year. This is from a texter on the text line. I enjoy that. That's good.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You can spin these however you want now, you know. It's a non-playoff bowl game, so you can always count, you know, talk about all the guys you were missing if you lose the game. But I do think that, I mean, I agree with Sparks kind of, you know, to a point on the quarterback situation. I mean, certainly, like, there's going to be a much stronger feeling from more people about Joe Milton if he plays well and will win Friday. I still think, even if that happens, there are a lot of people who are like, no, give me Nico. Give me Nico right now. And I don't think they're going to get their way, but we'll see. I mean, Joe Milton has to earn this job still. He's got a leg up.
Yeah, like, I'm really interested to see how he plays in this game. I mean, look, it is a bowl game. It doesn't mean really anything at the end of the day, one way or the other, about what next year is going to look like for Tennessee. But I do think there is some pressure on Joe Milton in this game as the starting quarterback, knowing the situation in the quarterback room. Like, I do think there's some pressure that he's got to deal with in this game to go out there, to play well, to make sure he's got a good showing. You know, I don't think you want your quarterback playing scared, and certainly I don't think that Joe Milton has ever done that. I don't think that that's been the way that he's gone about things. But I am interested to see not only how does he throw the ball in this game, but how does he respond to what I do think is some pressure on him. I think the fan base wants to see him play well. I think the coaching staff needs to see him play well in this game.
No, absolutely. That's to me the biggest story, the stakes. That's where the stakes are the biggest for Tennessee, is at quarterback. And, you know, it's interesting. That was, you know, Sparks is telling us about him, like, dancing in practice. It's funny because actually a couple of guys yesterday were talking about how he's really, like, stepped into that leadership role and has taken command of the whole team. And actually, I think it was Byron Young who said, you know, he actually reminds him a lot of Hendon Hooker in the way he's going about things. So maybe he's adjusting his approach a little bit. But the bottom line is, you got to play, you got to execute, you got to get the ball out on time, you got to be accurate. And yeah, I mean, you got to put some air under those deep passes and connect on some of those. You know, and if he has a big game, that's huge momentum for him. But I also think, yeah, like, I think you're right. The coaches, I mean, they're going to downplay that stuff, you know, of course. I mean, they see, they have way more information. They see it every day, and it's going to be a whole off season, and then it's going to be spring ball. And so, you know, they're not going to commit to anything, but I think they're going to feel a lot better about the depth chart being Milton one and whoever two, you know, next fall if he plays well in this game.
Yep, really interested to see that defensively. I am interested to see how the secondary responds in this game. Like Adam said, Jeremy Banks not going to be playing in this game. So what does kind of the leadership aspect look like on that side of the ball? But I think this is a really, really big opportunity, really fun opportunity for Tennessee taking on Clemson on Friday in the Orange Bowl. We'll have a little bit more on that a little bit later in the show coming up today. Joe is live down in Florida And we'll have a Tennessee update a little bit later in the show with some more media availability this morning for the Vols. Coming up next, we'll get into the Titans. Look ahead to the Titans and the Cowboys coming up tomorrow night on Thursday Night Football from Nissan Stadium. And we'll get into some very interesting comments from Mike Vrabel, both after the game against Houston and then kind of a walk back on Monday to some of those comments about the team, maybe their work ethic, and maybe what that's been like over the past few weeks for the Tennessee Titans. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.